Good morning. It's 9 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Joy Cardine. Former Vice President Al Gore is now an official Oscar winner for his film, An Inconvenient Truth. In it, he points out the dangers of global warming, and he asks people whether they are ready to change the way they live their lives. Well, it didn't take long for the Tennessee Center for Policy Research to issue a press release indicating that Gore's home in Tennessee used more electricity in a month than the average American household uses in a year. But Gore claims that while his homes do use a lot of energy, he does take steps to be green. He pays extra to use renewable energy sources, for example. But all of that energy use, green or otherwise, has other effects, like the production of carbon dioxide that leads to global warming. So Gore says he buys carbon offsets. By doing so, he says he brings his carbon footprint down to zero. Since then, that strategy has been supported by those who claim it's a legitimate way of reducing carbon production, and maligned by those who say it's a convenient way of allowing people with money to make their guilt go away while continuing to use as much energy as they want. So where is the truth in all of this? What is carbon offset? What does it do? Is there really such a thing, and does it really accomplish what Al Gore says it does? Or is it just a shell game that, in effect, doesn't change anything? Join in the discussion at 800-642-1234, or you can call us in Madison at 263-1890. If you'd like, you can also join by email at talk@wpr.org. Our guest this hour has been thinking about carbon offsets a lot. He is Nathan Haltman, an assistant professor of science, technology, and international affairs at Georgetown University. He's on sabbatical this year as a visiting research fellow at the James Martin Institute for Science and Technology at the Said Business School at Oxford University, and his current research focuses on international climate policy, including emissions trading in the carbon market. And Professor Haltman joins us from Oxford, England. Good morning.
Good morning, Gene.
Well, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio. First thing I'd like to do is to talk about the whole concept of carbon offsetting, because I think it's something that a lot of us have heard about, particularly in regards to, you know, large coal plants and so forth. But I don't know that a lot of people have heard about it in regard to their individual lives. And so let's start with the big concept and kind of work our way down to individual people.
Sure. Your summary was quite good, I think. And when we're thinking about carbon offsets, there are a number of different meanings that sometimes people attach to that, those two words when they're discussing it in the policy realm. You're right to point out that in many times people use carbon offsets to talk about projects that might be able to, for example, offset the greenhouse gas emissions of coal plants or perhaps the greenhouse gas emissions of an entire business. But there's also an alternative, which is that carbon offsets are also available for use or for purchase, if you will, by individuals to, for whatever reason, they feel like they have an obligation to offset their emissions, or perhaps like in the case of Al Gore, because they live a life that is sort of a green lifestyle, they want to sort of, for whatever reason, show their friends and make a statement about their carbon neutral life. The second category of offsets is what some people call the retail market for carbon offsets. Nobody has to purchase these things. They are just available out there. You can purchase them on the web or purchase them through a broker. And they are there just for people to purchase and consume, just as they would purchase and consume other sort of lifestyle products, if you will. So that's the picture as it currently stands in terms of the two kinds of offsets in the U.S. But it's important also to remember that in other parts of the world, carbon offsets or carbon market instruments, as they're more generally called, are used in a number of other regulatory regimes, some of which are actually required. And so, for example, in the European Union, where I'm currently living this year, there is a requirement that companies, about 50% of the carbon emissions of the European Union, are covered by a binding emissions trading system. And so all the firms that are covered by this structure need to make sure that they are actually reducing their emissions to a certain quota.
It's a very abstract concept if you're just starting to think about it. So explain to me in very simple language how it works, because as I understand it, I go to a website, I click on there, and I give them some money, and I know what my carbon footprint is, and somehow all my sins are erased.
Well, that's certainly one perspective on how the market is working. But let's talk about just the basics of how a carbon offset can be made or generated, if you will.
Yeah.
So imagine that you run some kind of plant that burns fossil fuel. Let's say it's a coal plant.
Okay.
And you decide that, I think that I could make a change to my plant that would reduce the emissions. I might, for example, put in a more efficient boiler or something that's a more efficient turbine, for example. That particular choice, if you change the technology in your plant, you can then produce more electricity and be emitting fewer greenhouse gases. And there are all kinds of ways to do this. It doesn't have to be a particular power plant. It could be, for example, a landfill. And at landfills, people can capture some of the gases that are released as a product of decomposition, and they can either flare them, and that means burn them, or they can even turn them into electricity by running them through a gas turbine. Now, that, too, also reduces the emissions from that landfill. And if people register those projects and get a sort of certification from an independent verifier, they can then sell those certificates on to consumers or businesses as essentially a piece of evidence that that particular business has purchased that particular ton of carbon dioxide or ton of greenhouse gas emissions reduction.
Okay, I think I actually have that concept in my head. And
great.
When we come back, we're going to continue the discussion. Our guest this hour is Nathan Hultman. We are talking about the idea of carbon offsetting and the role it can play in your life if you'd like it to. 800-642-1234 is the number that you can call if you'd like to be part of the discussion this morning. If you're calling for Madison, it is 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine. Coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon, At Issue with Peter Donalds. Whether it's an ad on TV or a spouse steering the choice for a vacation, the forces of persuasion are always in play. After 5, Peter Donalds' guest tells how to push away unwanted pressures and persuade others to our way of thinking. That's coming up after 5 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we are talking about the idea of carbon offsetting, and our guest is Nathan Hultman, an assistant professor of science, technology, and international affairs at Georgetown University. He's on sabbatical this year as a visiting research fellow, and I want to correct what we said at the beginning of the show. It's the Martin Institute for Science and Civilization, and it is the Saheed Business School at Oxford University. And I hope I got it right this time, Nathan Hultman.
That's perfect.
Okay, good. I like to have things correct if I can. Before the break, we were talking about the concepts of carbon offsetting, and it's fairly simple. You know, somebody does something somewhere, and with your contribution, you help support that. And so let's talk about the idea of people's carbon footprints. Because all of us apparently have one of those, particularly here in America, where we have cars, where we have things of that nature. What's a carbon footprint, and how do you go about figuring out what yours is?
Well, fortunately, you don't have to figure out your own. There's plenty of calculators online that can help you do it. But the way the calculators work, for example, is to take a survey. You type in some information about, for example, how much do you drive your car? What kind of car do you have? How many airplane flights do you take each year? What kind of electricity do you use in your home, and how much do you use? You can make it as simple or as complex as you wish. And basically what it does is it calculates the average amounts of fossil fuel inputs to these particular practices. And then at the end, it will tell you how many tons of greenhouse gas emissions you make in a given year. And that is just the definition of a carbon footprint. Let me just give you a little bit of a definitional thing. When people talk about carbon offsets or carbon footprints, I've also mentioned a couple of times greenhouse gases. And it's actually a fairly straightforward conversion, when people say carbon, what they are usually meaning is it's shorthand for carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is one of the major greenhouse gases. There are actually a number of other greenhouse gases. Methane, for example, is another greenhouse gas and is, in fact, more potent than carbon dioxide molecule for molecule. So what these calculators do and what sort of scientific experts would do if they're trying to decide how much a certain methane reduction might mean in terms of carbon is that they just multiply it by a conversion factor. So I use the terms greenhouse gas and carbon relatively interchangeably. So carbon footprint just means what is the amount of greenhouse gas emission you make or any given person might do in a year.
So I guess the question I have at the end of all this is carbon offsetting a good thing? Does it really make a difference if my $100 or whatever my contribution is supporting work of a factory somewhere else in America? Am I really doing something, or is it just a shell game?
Well, I'm going to give you an unsatisfactory answer in a way,
okay.
Which is that it really at this point, the offsets market is pretty young. And in some ways, I've categorized it as sort of the wild west of environmental policy. So there are a number of very high quality operations out there that are doing good work and that when you purchase your offset, you actually are getting what I'll call a real reduction, and I'll return to what I mean by that at a later time. There are other groups that are much shadier, and you really don't know necessarily what you're getting. And in particular, you don't know if you're actually paying for a real reduction. For example, you might just be paying for somebody to go plant some trees, and they might have done it anyway. And so if they would have done it anyway, it's not clear what your money is actually going toward, other than into the pocket of the entrepreneur who's doing it. So it's actually a very much a buyer beware environment right now, and it's important to make sure that if people are interested in purchasing offsets, that at this point they'll need to do a little bit of homework and at least go with a reliable brand or a reliable broker of some kind.
Now, as part of an overall strategy of trying to reduce, and I'll use the generic term greenhouse gases, where does carbon offsets fit into all of this? Is it something that makes a substantial difference? Is it something that's good for now but won't be good for 50 years down the road? What do you think about that?
I think that the latter, it is a good thing to do, I believe, right now. But I also don't think it is the answer. There is no single answer to the big global problem of global climate change in carbon emissions. So we really need to think about multiple ways to address this problem. Just to give you an idea of what the challenge is, most people think that in order to stabilize greenhouse gases in the atmosphere at a level that prevents dangerous human influence on the climate, we'll need to target reductions over the next 50 years of something like 60% below where current U.S. emissions are, okay, and that includes population growth and GDP growth, or growth in our economy. So in other words, we need to cut the absolute amount by up to 60%. And it is pretty clear that a voluntary program based on just people sort of volunteering to go out into the market and offset their own individual contributions is an excellent thing for many reasons, but it will not get us to that point in the long-term future where we need to be.
And really, I was going to say long-term, 50 years, if you think about it, is not that long-term.
It's not long-term when we're talking about businesses and corporations making investment decisions, for example, on coal-fired power plants, that have 40 to 60-year lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Let's find out what listeners think. We have a call from Lauren, who joins us from Delavan. Hi, Lauren.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. I find this whole business of the carbon footprint, I'll call them offsets, be really interesting because it's got a parallel to the futures market, an option market, in the financial instrument area, and that's really a zero-sum game. I mean, there is no real net gain or loss of carbon production. If I reduce my carbon footprint, I sell that, and somebody buys that and offsets their lack of reducing their carbon, the net sum of that is zero. So it really will not do anything to reduce carbon. It might reduce the growth of carbon production, but it won't reduce carbon production. And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call, Nathan Haltman. I imagine that's an argument you've heard before.
Yeah, it is. And this is where I have to go back to that distinction between, just very roughly, what we can call the high-quality credits and the lower-quality credits, because or offsets. When you when somebody pays money to what let's call it a high-quality offset, there's something that the offset project manager has to do, which is to basically say, what would have been the case, what would have been the business-as-usual case if I did not put this investment into my project? And so, for example, if you're running a landfill and your business-as-usual case might be just that your landfill stays as it was for years in the past. Now you get this extra money, you put it into a reduction. You wouldn't have done that reduction if you didn't get the money. And so, in other words, that person who's purchasing the offset is, in fact, getting a real reduction in that case. But a lot of this hinges on the question of defining that baseline, and that's a particular question. It's a source of a lot of disagreement and a lot of discussion in the policy community as to how to set the baseline in a way that is reasonable and that everybody can agree is legitimate.
And as an individual who just wants to do something good and you're looking at a website, again, it gets back to that buyer beware thing, and it's difficult to know without doing a whole bunch of math, I assume, whether you are actually making that difference.
That is true. And in fact, that's where, again, it just pays to do some homework, to look on the web, and I'm not going to make any particular endorsements about carbon offset providers, but one can actually find this information if you get on the web and do a little bit of searching. There are a couple of reports that do rate the different they do rate the different offset providers, and that will be helpful in making a judgment.
And I have to say, there's plenty of information out there. Just type in carbon offsets and prepare to read for a while.
That's right.
Let's go to John, who joins us from Slinger this morning. Hi, John.
Hi. I have to agree with the previous caller. He sounds like he's got the numbers down better than I do, but my opinion is Mr. Gore could do a lot more good if he would actually reduce instead of just kind of equal out his use, assuage his guilt, whatever it be. And I'm also concerned about this being another ploy, business opportunity in this this global warming arena. I know there was fraud questions regarding this whole movement, and just want to hear the gentleman's opinion about this sort of thing. Thank you.
John, thanks for the call, and we've talked a bit about the Wild West aspect of the business right now, the industry. And Nathan Haltman, do you see that changing anytime soon?
Well, this is where I think that there are a couple of ways to get some clarity on this particular market. We'll take the second question first.
Sure.
It is a bit of a Wild West situation right now, but because of the increasing demand by consumers to have some idea of clarity, and so people don't have to build up their own expertise to a level of somebody who might be an actual entrepreneur or an actual academic on this question, there have emerged a couple of different standardization proposals, and also there is, in fact, one standard that's already out there called the Gold Standard, which is basically, another a sort of independent party will verify and vet the credits so that you know that you're getting something legitimate and real. And that's what we've seen emerge in many, many other commodities markets. And in fact, in some ways, I think the previous caller, Lauren, was exactly right that this is, in fact, a financial instrument at some level. And much like other commodities that have emerged in the past in terms of their standardization and the grading and the different prices that are paid. For example, soybeans have all kinds of different grades that people can purchase on the market. So just like that, so too carbon has a number of different grades, and we're just seeing now.
And I'm
going
to have to ask you to hold that thought,
yep,
because we've got to take a break, but we'll come back to it after a look at the news. So don't lose track of that.
No worries.
Talking about carbon offsetting here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this morning. The topic this hour is carbon offsets. We heard the story during the NPR newscast about Al Gore at the White House today, and he'll be talking, following up on his movie, An Inconvenient Truth. Well, Al Gore was in the news a couple of weeks ago about his electric use, and part of it, he says, is okay because he offsets part of it with what is called carbon offsets. And that takes his carbon footprint down to zero. We're talking about that concept, the concept of carbon offsetting, carbon footprints this hour with Nathan Hultman. His current research focuses on international climate policy, including emissions trading in the carbon market, and he's on sabbatical this year as a visiting research center at the Martin Institute for Science and Civilization at the Said Business School at Oxford University, and that's where we're talking to him. Before the break, Nathan Hultman, we were talking about the some of the different grades of carbon offsetting and the whole idea that the Wild West that is out there right now, as we called it, can't last forever, or it shouldn't last forever if this is going to turn into something.
That's right. I think as the interest has grown tremendously in really the last year in the U.S. on this topic, and it's been maybe about 2 years of intense interest here in the U.K., and as we've seen a lot more people getting interested and involved in this particular approach to reducing emissions, we've seen a lot of proposals, and I think we will increasingly see some clarity on standards that will allow people to make better informed choices about which kinds of offsets they buy so that they know when they do buy one that they're actually getting some real reductions for their money.
800-642-1234 is the number that you can call if you'd like to join in. We do have an open line for you right now. 263-1890 is the Madison number, or email works too, talk@wpr.org. Before the break as well, we heard from John Enslinger, and he said, and this is an argument you've heard a lot as well, wouldn't Al Gore just be a lot better off by simply reducing his electric use and not worrying so much about carbon offsets?
I think that's absolutely true, and it's important when people do think about how to reduce their particular contribution, their own personal contribution to climate change. If they do choose to do something about it, there are many ways to do it. Offsetting the carbon is one way. It could be an important way for us to approach this problem, but in many ways, just reducing our energy use is also important, and I think this is where Al Gore got called a bit on this particular question, that his particular use of his choices about energy use might not have aligned perfectly with what he was arguing at the end of the credit series in his movie The Inconvenient Truth. And that actually goes for both people and businesses, often installing efficient light bulbs or using perhaps purchasing a more efficient car, and for businesses especially, building, when they're putting new buildings in, building green, building energy efficient, using the appropriate amount of insulation. These are actions that cost a bit more upfront but can pay immense dividends over the lifetime of the investment.
Now, your research right now focuses on international climate policy, so you're looking at, you know, the big picture, I guess. And so I guess it's hard for some of us maybe in Wisconsin or Al Gore in Tennessee to always have that big picture in mind. But as you look around the world, where are the trouble spots in terms of production? I mean, the U.S. always comes out on top of that pile, it seems. But as you look down the road, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, where do you see the next issues emerging?
Just to clarify, in terms of climate change and emissions, is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So right now, I mean, the big problems, and I'm guessing that I'm sure your listeners know about these problems, that we know that we Americans often use a lot of energy. The question is how to approach the question of our own energy use, both as a country and sort of individuals, is quite important. But also, we know that there are some very large developing economies out there that are, we know about China, we know about India, we know that their economies are growing at a very fast pace. Their populations are growing somewhat faster than the United States, although nothing too alarming there. But clearly, as their economies grow and their power needs grow and the people are purchasing cars and raising their standard of living, China and India become very important in terms of the global approach to reducing our global emissions and sort of reducing the impacts of climate change. So any international approach that purports to actually address this problem absolutely has to include China and India and Brazil, as well as the United States. And all of these countries are actually right now not involved in a meaningful and sort of a very aggressive way in the current international approach to climate change. And that's something that I would strongly say needs to happen in the next 10 to 20 years.
Lots to talk about, and we've got some callers who would like to join in. And let's go to Jerry, who joins us from Madison. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I give money to the Katrina hurricane victims. Everybody says that's a good thing, and the government says it's a good thing, so I can tax deduct that on my income tax return. I give money to NPR. That's a good thing for the society. I give money to companies that indeed reduce, truly reduce their carbon emissions, and that's a good thing. Therefore, if I'm doing good things that help the country, help people, I should receive a tax benefit. Second point, if I need money in my household to replace my refrigerator, replace my all the things that are unenergy efficient, maybe I should have access to the carbon offset money as well. And lastly, if I'm a foreign investor and I give money to people in the United States, maybe I should get a little bit of interest on the $10,000 that I might give to a particular factory to help install efficient technology. Take my answers off the air.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. And, boy, Jerry's been doing some thinking on that, Nathan Haltman.
And Jerry, I think you bring up three excellent points, and they all sort of come with their own set of discussions and debate that would need to happen to kind of enable those in the policy world. But I also don't see any reason why, for example, the state of Wisconsin couldn't pursue, with the exception of the foreign direct investment one, couldn't pursue policies that would be along those lines, potentially in your state. So it's the kind of thing that I think what we'll see is as the market matures for both voluntary offsets and also potentially for emissions trading as a state or national policy, that we will get some additional clarity on questions like that, and in fact might have some room for creative additional solutions to the problem like you've brought up.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the idea of carbon offsets this hour. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number you can call. In Madison, it is 263-1890. Our guest this hour is Nathan Haltman. He is an assistant professor of science, technology, and international affairs at Georgetown University, currently on sabbatical at Oxford University. His current research focuses on international climate policy, including emissions trading in the carbon market. Let's go to Sanjay, who joins us from Little Chute. Hi, Sanjay.
Good morning. I am calling the carbon offset idea. Sounds like an interesting idea, but it sounds to me like you need a lot of money to make a difference. And it sounds to me like if you have a lot of money and you can buy these carbon offsets and then really not do anything other than count on someone else to do it for you, it seems a very elitist type of approach to things and that something that people with a lot of money could afford to do. I have also heard the person who worked together with Mr. Gore to develop this concept of global carbon offsets is an individual who has said that in order to change the world, we must bring down the industrial societies of the world. And I know that Mr. Gore himself has said that the world, the worst enemy to the world is the internal combustion engine. And I think what we have here is really not so much an attempt to change the carbon, but a marketing effort. And I would like to know also if your guest knows any place where I could buy a skyhook. Thank you very much.
So, okay, Sanjay, thanks for the call, and a lot of issues there, but let's focus in on sort of the elitist one, because that is one that comes up all the time, at least in the reading that I've done on this, Nathan Haltman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and in fact, that's been a particular criticism of market approaches to regulating greenhouse gases and carbon emissions since the early days and since sort of the mid-90s. So it's an important topic to actually address very explicitly. And I think that in many ways there's still there's not really necessarily a right answer to this question, but the issues are these. The whole idea of trading emissions back and forth in some way, so in other words, I might purchase a carbon offset, or, for example, a business may choose to continue a particular practice and then offset their emissions. The whole reason for that happening is that a lot of times these projects, these emissions reduction projects, can reduce emissions at a fairly low price for carbon when you compare it to the emissions that, for example, I myself might have to reduce. So what happens is that for a firm, for example, a firm in Madison might have, if they want to reduce their own emissions internally, it might cost them $20 or $30 per ton. But if they look elsewhere, perhaps to other projects even in the U.S., or perhaps even to projects that are abroad, they might be able to get the same amount of reductions for maybe a dollar a ton or maybe $4 to $5 a ton, depending on the kind of project. So the idea is that one can actually make one's own investment go a lot further towards solving the climate problem if one actually goes into this market system and starts using the market to find the lowest cost emission reductions around the world. That's the theory of it. It certainly does raise these questions, though, of whether it is appropriate and just for people in, for example, rich world, maybe Al Gore, to be purchasing offsets from people in developing countries. That's an unresolved question. It is not different from other kinds of questions that we have in our market economy right now, but it's still one that I think is an appropriate one to raise and discuss in a public forum.
Well, let's take a break and come back and discuss it. We're coming up on 12 minutes before 8 o'clock, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9 this morning, according to Kathleen Dunn's guest, the beginnings of morality can be found in the behavior of primates. That's coming up after 9 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we are talking about the idea of carbon offsetting with our guest, Nathan Haltman. He is an assistant professor of science, technology, and international affairs at Georgetown University. He is currently on sabbatical as a visiting research fellow at the Martin Institute for Science and Civilization at the Said Business School at Oxford University, and that's where we're talking to him. Before the break, Nathan Haltman, we were talking a little bit about the whole argument of elitism within the carbon offsetting world right now. And without some sort of mandatory rules, do you see that changing?
Even with mandatory rules, that's not going to change. The whole point of a market-based approach to dealing with carbon emissions is that the lowest cost emissions will be the ones that are addressed first or that are used first. And that will be the case whether it's a voluntary offset system like the one we're seeing emerge in the U.S. right now, or whether it's the kind of emissions trading, international emissions trading system that we see in the EU or under the Kyoto Protocol or under some other kind of future international protocol, there will always be some amount of trading emissions back and forth, and there will always be some questions about how or why people can use up more emissions in one place than the other. But that's in some ways a linked question to the issue of how to reduce our overall emissions. But at this point, there is a lot of agreement in the U.S. at least, that approaching these emissions reductions with a market approach is probably going to make it the lowest cost way to do it.
800-642-1234 is the number you can call if you'd like to join in. 263-1890 in Madison. Elsewhere, you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. We go to La Crosse now, and Kathy joins us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thanks, and thanks for this program. I just wanted to call in and say that at the beginning of this year, I purchased a TerraPass for my car. I don't drive my car that much, but I wanted to do something, and I can't afford to get a new car right now. So it's sort of a personal offset, and TerraPass was started by students at the Wharton School of Business, I think. And they also exchange credits on the Chicago, I can't remember the name of it, but
Chicago Climate Exchange. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And with the money that they get from people purchasing offsets, they invest in clean energy and greenhouse gas reduction projects, many of them in my area, but almost all of them in the U.S. They're third-party verified. And I feel pretty good about it. And it hasn't made me just drive my car more or without thinking about it, but it's really made me think about it more and find alternative ways of getting around when I can. And also, I have a bumper sticker on my car, so maybe it makes other people think about it. And I just wanted to mention with the Al Gore thing that after the Republican operative released his private energy bill, it was found that not only does he live at this place, but he also has two offices, a visitor center, and some other things. And when you count in all of that, it turns out his energy use is kind of less than standard places for his area. In addition, almost a third of the power generated in Tennessee apparently is generated by hydro and nuclear. So maybe you could talk about the TerraPass and also about different means of generating electricity and how they contribute to climate change. Thank you.
All right, Kathy, thanks for the call. And TerraPass is just one of, several firms out there right now where you can go and, as an individual, buy some of these carbon offsets that we've been talking about. And TerraPass is one that you see mentioned an awfully lot.
Yeah, it is one of the well-known ones, and there are others too that one can find online. What Kathy mentioned, though, is in a way what one hopes might be the outcome of a well-run voluntary carbon offset system, and that's that when you have a guarantee that your money is actually going to new projects to actually making real reductions, then the system is working, and it's just that right now that's very people need to stick with these kind of well-known brands in some ways because it's very hard to differentiate for somebody who's not an expert what constitutes a real versus sort of a faux reduction or a false reduction. So yes, it, absolutely, and I do think that honestly when people do pay for the their own emissions, there are two ways to look at it. One is maybe you're going to emit more because you're taken care of. On the other hand, when people are paying for things, the whole idea with a market approach is that if things cost more, one will use less of them. One will try to conserve a bit more. And ultimately, under a sort of binding emissions reductions program that would happen with a big sort of a policy decision either at the state or national level, that will be kind of a mandatory addition into anybody's energy use. But for now, even for people who kind of take it on voluntarily, I think clearly it means they're thinking more about their emissions and their carbon footprint, and may indeed, that learning process may indeed help spur additional reductions either by themselves or their friends or their community.
Dave joins us, and he is in Rockford, Illinois. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I'm very much in favor of people reducing their own carbon emissions. I think it's important for people to know their own carbon footprint and to be aware of this and to make adjustments in our own lives. I work with students in the public school, and we've done fundraisers before to do worthy projects for the community. And people donate gladly because they know it's going to a nonprofit organization and it's doing something good for the community. This carbon offset thing sounds to me like a fundraiser for industry. It's a lot of fancy jargon, but what we're saying is these improvements are going to help the businesses. They'll actually save money in the long run, but they won't make these changes unless somebody else pays for it. I'm in favor of taking care of the environment, and I think we should each do our part, but I think industry should step up to the plate and pay for improvements. Years ago, people didn't know, and they put up factories that were not green, they weren't environmentally friendly, they didn't know better. Now we do, and there's no excuse for it.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. And Nathan Haltman, what about Dave's perspectives?
Well, I think Dave brings up one of many good arguments as to why this is not just a problem of an individual, but also a public policy issue that we need to deal with, not just sort of delegating it out to every single individual, but also thinking about it in the public policy domain. There are many other problems that we've dealt with in the public domain that are commons problems. The global climate is a common good. It's a common public good. It provides us lots of services, as we know. We like when our weather's decent. Basically, like I said before, I don't think it's going to solve the problem just to rely on individual actions. And this is where that argument and many others have been made about how, again, state legislatures, even municipalities, and the federal government in the U.S., in conjunction with partners in other countries, the major emitting countries in the world, can move forward as a group. And it doesn't have to be all in lockstep. I mean, the approach can be taken in a patchwork fashion. That's what we're seeing now, sort of this patchwork of approaches emerging. But nevertheless, it is not appropriate just to let the individual on his or her own solve the entire climate problem. So I think that Dave's point about making sure that we pursue multiple approaches to this is quite right.
Now, as we approach the top of the hour, what do you see in the short term as things that people should be keeping their eyes open for in terms of carbon offsets? What sorts of things, if people are interested in getting involved, should they be paying attention to?
Well, this is where we get back to this question of individual versus group, and it, you know, we heard at the news break how Al Gore is testifying today on the Hill about global warming. We all know that Al Gore had this movie about how important it is to think about climate change. At the end of Al Gore's movie, there were a number of steps of sort of things individuals can do, and I have to say I was. That was one of the major failings in my mind of that film. The scientific case was set out fairly reasonably, but the overall recommendations of just thinking about how people can offset their own personal emissions, I think, falls quite short. And it's for reasons I've mentioned earlier in the show, which is that I think that, yes, people do need to think about their own emissions. They do need to think about whether they want to, for their own personal reasons, offset their own carbon emissions. But also, it's important for other people to offset their emissions. It's something that not just a few conscientious people should take on in the country. It's a public problem, and it needs to be addressed in the public domain. So I would say that to add to Al Gore's list of items at the end of his movie, we should certainly think about having people doing the usual political action, getting out in their communities, doing the publicity. Dave said he and his classes often sort of run awareness-raising campaigns. That's just the kind of thing we need to see. Take it to your state legislature.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there.
That's fine.
Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. It was nice to talk to your listeners.
Nathan Haltman has been joining us. We've been talking about carbon offsetting for the past hour here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.